This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey, thanks for listening to this Joy podcast. If you like what we do and you listen to our podcast on a regular basis, it's time to put your money where your ears are. It's Radiothon. Go to joy.org.au, become a member or donate, and keep us out loud and proud so we can make more of the stuff you like.
Broadway icon John Cameron Mitchell channels the essence of his glam rock icon, Hedwig and the Angry Inch, for one night only at Arts Centre Melbourne this July. So put on some makeup, turn up the A-track, and pull the wig down from the shelf. John Cameron Mitchell, July 10 at Arts Centre Melbourne. Book now. Joy sponsor.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
This is Saturday Magazine.
It won't have escaped most people, and certainly won't have escaped emergency services workers, that the government this week hopefully delivered on its promise to fix the mess up in mandatory sentencing that saw two people, two offenders, basically walk away without jail time for an attack on a paramedic, Paul Judd, who we had on this show a few weeks ago. Mick Stevenson is the Executive Director of Emergency Operations with Ambulance Victoria. Good morning, Mick. How are you? It's Macca.
G'day, Macca. How are you?
Pretty good. I believe you've been part of this discussion and this negotiation with the government on behalf of Ambulance Victoria. Am I right in saying that there is now legislation, or there will be legislation once it's proclaimed, I suppose, that is actually genuinely going to require mandatory sentencing if someone attacks an emergency service worker?
Yeah, that's correct, Macca. The legislation is drafted. I believe it was introduced into Parliament on Wednesday. And in essence, the special reasons or the special circumstances that were previously in the Act that allowed offenders to argue that they had reason not to be sent to the jail are in essence being removed. And in toto, except in the case, I guess, of mental impairment due to...
You still there, Mick? Yes.
Yeah, I'm here, Macca.
Yeah, sorry, it just cut in and out a little bit. Are you, or is Ambulance Victoria, are you happy with this? I know it puts you on the spot a little bit. Is this the outcome that you wanted? And I know you're actually you do function as a paramedic as well. Are you happy with this outcome?
I think, Macca, we'd be really happy if no one assaulted a paramedic. That'd be the first case in point, and there'd be no need for this legislation, of course, if no one assaulted an emergency services worker. So that'd be the happiest position we could be in. But as we know, currently, about once every 2 days, we have someone actually physically assaulted by a patient or by a bystander. And so there is need for the legislation, there's no doubt about it. And I think the case of Paul Judd and Sinead Bentley signalled pretty loudly that the existing legislation didn't work and didn't actually act as a general deterrent to the community to commit such offences. So there's no doubt that the Act needed to be changed. I think there's a lot of noise from paramedics when those two offenders didn't receive a custodial sentence. So in the case of Paul and Sinead, so I think paramedics generally, emergency services workers generally, would consider this legislation to be necessary. And I think, about once every 2 days, paramedics are involved in a serious assault. And if you think about the police, obviously they're exposed much more frequently than we are, and obviously they need significant protection as well.
That's a shocking set of statistics there, Mick. It's Tass here. Mick, could you explain to our listeners how this new legislation will work and what is different?
Yeah, morning, Tass. The legislation, in fact, already existed. There was a Crimes Act and a Sentencing Act, the Crimes Act of 1958, the Sentencing Act of 1991. What's been changed, in essence, is that if you assault deliberately or knowingly assault an emergency services worker, it becomes what's called a Category 1 offence, so the minimum mandatory sentence applies. And what has changed, in essence, is... And this is in the case of Paul Judd and Sinead Bentley, the two offenders argued that they had special circumstances or compelling circumstances not to be sentenced to jail. And in this case, the Act removes those special circumstances. And so what it says basically is that the general deterrence in the sentencing must take precedence, that there would be less weight given to the personal circumstances of the offender, and that the sentencing judge must not have regard to the offender's previously good character, an early guilty plea, their prospects of rehabilitation or parity with other sentences. So they're basically saying, unless you've got mental illness, confirmed mental illness, and that has to be diagnosed and confirmed by medical experts, then whatever other reasons you proffer for committing the crime, they will not be taken into consideration, nor will your good character in the past be taken into consideration, nor will your prospects of rehabilitation be taken into consideration. So, in essence, if you commit one of these crimes, so commit a violent act against an emergency services worker, you'll go to jail with a minimum non-parole period of 6 months, and I think that the minimum sentences are up to 5 years for these crimes. So it's quite a significant change.
So that's actually pretty clear cut and dry then. If you assault a emergency services provider, that's it, you're in jail for 6 months minimum.
That's correct.
Yep.
And that, I think the other thing that's changed is that in the case of Paul Judd and Sinead Bentley, and I'm not a lawyer, so you'll have to excuse me, but I believe the Director of Public Prosecutions didn't have the capacity to appeal that decision. That amendment will also be made to an act to allow the Director of Public Prosecutions to appeal should they think that an error had been made in the sentence.
You're pretty much right there in terms of the Director of Public Prosecutions didn't believe they had the capacity. They would need the permission of the Attorney General as well. Mm-hmm. I was disappointed because it was a manifestly unjust sentence. They should have. The DPP should have stood up or at least said something, but they didn't. The reality is here, Mick, is that all emergency service workers, you know, paramedics, police, fireys, you know, CFA, you know, hospital workers, they're bearing the brunt of this. A lot of it, we know, is related to substance abuse. Some of it is related to mental illness. Obviously we hope this is going to have a deterrent effect, but tell us some of the strategies that Ambulance Victoria in particular have and that paramedics use to try and stay safe. How do they what sort of protocols are there for them to avoid going into situations where they could be at risk?
Yeah, I think it's very clear. We make it very clear to our staff that their safety is paramount, that it's number one. And in that sense, we don't expect paramedics to go into any environment where they feel they are at risk. And so, and that happens daily. Paramedics will stand off cases or not attend cases where they believe they're going to be at risk. So until such time as the police attend, if indeed we attend at all. So that's the first thing, I suppose. And that's very clear in paramedics' minds that they don't have to go into dangerous scenes. But of course, sometimes you'll enter these scenes and find yourself in strife that was not, you wouldn't previously been aware of. So what we also do is we've done a lot of training with our staff in terms of de-escalating situations, so appreciating the risk in the situation and being able to de-escalate it. Paramedics are very good at this stuff. That's the reality of it. They're very good communicators. They're good with people and generally will work their way out of strife if they're in it. We've introduced body-worn cameras on a trial or a pilot basis to sort of understand whether or not they improve paramedic safety. And we'll have an ongoing education program around this. And to that extent, given the effort we've made around this particular issue, we've seen a very significant drop-off in the rate of occupational violence amongst the paramedics. I think about 60% reduction in a 12-month period. And certainly the amount of assaults that lead to an actual injury has dropped off dramatically. So that education has worked, but unfortunately, as I say, the problem is still manifest in the community, and about once every 2 days we're seeing a paramedic assaulted and injured.
So, I mean, they're good strategies. If, just in closing, Mick, you know, congratulations for actually getting this. I mean, we made a little bit of noise about it on this program, as you know. But you've been in the ambulance service a long time. When, you know, if you can put sort of a timeline when is this? I mean, obviously it's a problem now, but really, when did this start to really come up on the radar as something that was happening too regularly? That it was happening, you know. I mean, obviously, you know, years and years and years ago, you never heard of it. When did this start to become prevalent?
You know, on sodium mackerel, probably 20 years ago, it was almost unheard of, and you get the very occasional case, and they stood out because it was most unusual. And probably, I'd say the last 5 years, it's become a very significant problem. There seems to be, and certainly our reporting of violence towards paramedics has become much better. So paramedics are providing us the information we need to understand the problem. And that's been over the last couple of years, certainly since our education program has been in place, and we've asked people to let us know of every instance, and we're probably getting much better intelligence than we've had before. But I'd suggest to you it's probably been the last 4 or 5 years when we've seen a dramatic increase in this. And we've certainly seen actual cases of violence against paramedics increasing dramatically. As I say, probably we might have heard about it once or twice a year 10 years ago. Now we're hearing about it once every 2 or 3 days.
So, Mick, what's actually changed? Why are we seeing this escalation in violence?
Well, if you look at all cases, about half the cases involve mental illness and or drug and alcohol abuse. And so certainly drug and alcohol abuse becoming a much more prevalent problem. That's well known. I mean, we're seeing many, many more cases of drug intoxication or alcohol intoxication year on year. And that's right across society. So there's no particular age group involved. It's not gender specific. We're seeing violence towards paramedics right across the spectrum because of those problems. And I'd suggest the increase you would attribute to drug and alcohol abuse predominantly, but for some reason, and I have no idea why, there seems to be a denigration of standards in society where people respect people in uniform and respect what they're doing for work. And it's most unusual, I think, you know, to be in a caring situation where you're trying to offer someone the care that they deserve when they're unwell to be assaulted. So it's a pretty, you know, it's a pretty confronting and unusual circumstance. But there's no doubt that it's on the increase, and I think probably drug and alcohol abuse is a very significant contributor to that.
Right. Well, look, thanks for giving us your time today, Mick. We appreciate it. I know you've got a very busy day. A good outcome. Let's see, from my perspective, I hope the courts actually interpret the legislation the way it was written. Otherwise, I think governments are going to see a lot more ambulances sign written.
We'd probably say, Macca.
Well, I think the real issue, Macca, is that we actually want to see a decline in
violence. We want to see a decline, yeah. Great. Thanks for your time, Mick. Really appreciate it and appreciate your work.
Thanks, Macca. Thanks,
Tess. Okay, bye-bye.
Hi, this is John Borghetti, the CEO of Virgin Australia. Just like Joy 94.9, we are flying high and proud.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.